listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello there. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services. Delighted to have them as our presenting sponsor and have a very exciting show today. Michael, you want to tell them who we have?
We do indeed. We have with us one of music's most enduring stars, whether in concert, on Broadway, or in the recording studio. The extraordinary Roslyn Kind will join us in just a few minutes.
And also in studio with us today is noted theater and television actor Ian Vogt, who has been receiving rave reviews for his work in the current hit Los Angeles stage play of Grapes and Nuts, among other things. We'll be talking to Ian later in the show.
And we also have in the studio someone very special, Paul.
What's that?
Who we talk about frequently on the radio.
Oh, that's right.
That
that's right.
Your mother.
My mother is
Charlotte.
Visiting from Connecticut. She's over there. She's not mic'd. She was insistent about, don't give me a mic or a headset. I'll just sit in the corner, you know.
Don't mind me.
And so she's in visiting. We're happy to have her, and she'll be able to share embarrassing stories about me if called upon.
Well, and she probably will be called upon.
And if not for mocking that woman, I've been doing a one-person show for about 9 years, and if I wasn't able to mock my mother, I wouldn't have had work for just as long.
and I must...
Here's to objectifying family.
Yeah,
okay?
Absolutely. I must explain to everyone, all of our listeners, that, as you know, Paul, iconic television, film, and musical theater star Richard Chamberlain was originally scheduled to be with us today, but had an unexpected professional conflict come up, so we're in the midst of rescheduling his appearance on State of the Arts in the very near future.
But he will be back.
And I think you, Rosalind, you are a friend of Richard's.
Yes, I go way back with Richard. I first met him in jazz class in New York City in the 60s at Luigi's. He came to Broadway to do Breakfast at Tiffany's, and I was a student in the class, and he used to follow me. I thought, and then one day, I said, don't worry, we miss steps sometimes, and he missed a step or something.
Oh, he used to follow
so
you dance?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're looking in the mirror,
Paul.
And people are in front of you.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, he
no,
wasn't.
No, you made him sound like a stalker. I'm like,
no,
what are you
doing? I wish. I thought he had a bad day, so I said, don't worry, it'll be okay. So who's worried? It was like, he didn't come back to class for I don't know how long. For that whole time, I thought I made this man miserable until he said hello to me when he came back. But he's a doll. We just did the Stephen Chase Humanitarian Awards last February.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Well, I have such great respect for him as an actor.
Oh, so. My God, yes.
So when he comes back, maybe we'll have you call in and surprise him or something.
Oh, yeah,
that would be
that.
Lovely.
Because, yeah?
I mean, I would have put my slippers under his bed when I was in high school with Dr. Kildare.
You and my mom.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Did you know that he was a singer, too? Did
yes,
you know that?
Yeah.
I mean, I told him that. Do you remember? Build me a kiss to build. Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. That was his single.
Wow.
I sang it to him at the. He said, "I can't believe you remember."
Wow.
I tell you, we've had a couple of people on the show. Richard Chamberlain. I mean, they're just a perfect example of these gentlemen, that are, not in their 20s anymore,
like
safe
you
to
and
say
I, yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But they just look, I mean,
and
even Tab Hunter. I mean, we had Tab Hunter, and Tab, I mean, the guy is what, 78?
79, I think. 79.
And he's still like chiseled out of marble, this guy.
Mm-hmm.
The,
yeah.
the genes that these people must have. It's just like, wish I had them. Don't.
And they're not surgery.
Half of my genes are good. Half of my genes are here. These are the good genes.
Well, your mom looks pretty darn good.
She does. She
fantastic.
Does.
And she's a nice lady on top of it.
Oh, Michael, don't say
so,
that.
So, Paul, how was your week?
My week was good, but I want to hear about your week and your unusual story of something that happened to you at a gas
station. It's true. Well, it didn't happen at the gas station. I went to do some grocery shopping and to the local Ralph's, supermarket here that I go to, and I'm getting out of the car, and the car, I've parked in this particular spot, which is facing a very well-lit gas station, right
okay.
across the way here. Mm-hmm. And you know how this fashion trend is with all the young boys and young men, where they're wearing the skinny jeans, and are they skinny jeans? No, they're not skinny jeans. They're the baggy jeans.
The baggy jeans.
That go halfway across their
yeah.
ass,
uh-huh.
On the
so
other side.
So that a little crack is sticking out of
there. Yeah, got mm-hmm. to have crack, right? Yeah, that's what it is.
Say no to crack, Michael.
Say no to crack. Well, so I'm parking, and I see this young man getting out of his car to gas up his car, and he is deciding to make a stop to the back seat, apparently, opens the door to get something out, bends over to do that, and in the course of that movement, the pants go completely down to the ground.
Yeah.
And no, he is not wearing any underwear.
Oh, no.
No.
And nor did he ever miss a beat. He got what he was getting out of the back seats. He put it on the trunk of the car and proceeded to very casually pull up the pants, but no further than the middle of his ass.
And that man is Ian Vogt, and he's with us today. Well,
he
no,
took my card, and he's here today.
I have to tell you, I don't want to compete with you on the exposed ass story.
Well, and know, we've been talking about that recently a lot. You know, go ahead.
Yeah. But I was, and so my mother is here because she's involved in this story. There was a little clothing store. There's a clothing store in Ridgefield, Connecticut, where I grew up, called Pants and it was like a precursor to the Gap.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was just, but it was privately owned. And it was late 70s, early 80s, and late 70s, because I was still in high school. And because it was the late 70s, the dressing rooms were not really dressing rooms. They were like these tubes with ovals cut in them, and you would step into them like a pod to be
the
dressing
room. There was no drape?
There was a drape. It was like a plastic garbage bag. You know, not a high-end store. And you'd step in the little pod. Now, I'm 6 foot. I was about 6 feet tall then. I weighed 135 pounds. Okay.
Wow.
I was basically Keith Richards after the accident. Okay.
Okay.
And, you know, hips forming the rain gutter for your waist, that kind of look.
Attractive. Yeah.
Yeah. And with my size 14 feet. Okay,
uh-huh.
The gunboat feet.
Hold up your hands for a while.
Come on, there we go.
Look
okay.
at those hands.
God.
See, now here
like
we go.
Three of mine.
We've
you know
gone into sideshow
you know
land.
What they say.
I know what they say about hands. They sometimes say that about the nose, too.
Sadly, that's also true, as you could see, Rosalind. And sadly, the benefits end there. But anyway, what was I saying? I'm blushing on the radio.
plastic garbage bag.
Plastic garbage bag. Step in. I'm trying on pants all day. I figure, you know what? I've taken my shoes off too often today. I'm going to pull this pair of jeans on and leave my sneakers on. Got 1 foot halfway and stepped backward because I started to lose my balance. And the aforementioned little lip of the oval that didn't make it all the way to the floor hit it. Fell backwards out of the dressing room, pants around my ankles, looking like this cadaverous, flesh-colored crab, just trying to make my way back in. And I go back in, I pull the curtain shut, and this is what I hear from the outside. It's okay, Paul. I'll stay out here until everyone who saw you has made their purchase. So she policed the store for me for humiliation purposes, so I'm grateful. Well, that's my exposed ass story. That's all I got for you. So on to nicer topics.
Yes, and as stated earlier, our first guest is indeed one of music's most distinguished singers in a league of her own, I might add. Her style is unforgettably captivating, both in concert and on recordings, and Los Angeles audiences will have a chance to see her in person in concert this weekend, October 8th and 9th at Hollywood's Catalina Jazz Club. Paul,
yes.
Here's a sampling of what people can expect from the one and only Miss Rosalind Kind.
A friendly face, the kind of face that melts you with a grin. The kind of eyes that welcome you the minute you walk in. The tender glance you simply can't refuse. At times like this, a girl could use a dog. When you tell him things, there's nothing you can't say. And unlike certain people, you can teach.
What a lovely, lovely sentiment.
What is? And just coming from a man who owns two dogs, who I met earlier today.
Who you met earlier, and Charlotte met, and I knew of Rosalind's dog.
You knew
dog.
My Josh.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to put him down in 2000
I'm
from
so
mitral
sorry.
Valve disease. I
wow.
brought him to her 7-year annual, and they heard a murmur in his heart for the first time. She sent me immediately to the specialist, and his heart was already 10% larger than it should be.
Oh, my.
I said, we're going to turn him around. He's not going anywhere. This is going to be a miracle dog. And you know, they basically told me 9 months to 5 years the most, and I did have him for 3 more years. And they said,
wow.
That was because of all the love and good care he got. But, you know, it was so sad because he was a little Yorkie, and I thought I would have him for years and years and years, and he was my soulmate. I mean, his little Pleiadian-type eyes, when they would just look inside your soul. And, you know, he made his Broadway debut with me.
Oh, really?
At the Helen Hayes Theater in Three from Brooklyn on Christmas Eve. We sent him across the stage while the star performer was doing his bit about, comedy bit about animals with hangers on their heads on the roof, and we sent Joshy out with antlers. And he got about a third of the way out to the piano, noticed the audience, dumped the antlers, and was on his way out to
oh,
the audience.
Oh, so to screams. Screams, I'm sure. But 9 months to 5 years, that's
yeah.
a wide variable for a vet to give. I mean, that's
yeah.
that's really... Oh, but
you know. Still, I didn't want him to go at
no,
all.
No, who does?
It was
who
just...
Does?
When they couldn't turn him around that last time, I just... I was devastated.
Oh, yeah.
I mourned my little four-legged baby like I would have mourned something from my own womb. You know,
you try to explain that to people who haven't had dogs, you know, or, you know, people feel that way about their cats, too. I'm not as much a cat person as a dog person.
No,
you try to explain that to people, and they're just like, oh, it's just a dog. It's like, no, then you've never had that bond.
Yeah.
You
know?
Ian, what about you? Do you have animals?
I do. A lab mix, black lab mix. She's a great dog.
Vexy.
Yeah.
Good dog.
He
yeah.
has another very special baby in his life. He's 7 weeks old now,
yes.
but it's his young, beautiful...
New son.
Oh, son.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my dog's now taking a back seat to the son.
Yeah, I was
that always
it's
happens when the dogs
him.
Come first. You know, they always have to take the back seat. But they'll, you know, it's great when you watch your baby kind of get used to the puppy they bond.
Yeah,
have you seen some of these things that come across the internet where the animals with the babies and how they act with them?
Oh,
and,
yes. You know, yes.
My heart just goes.
Oh,
it's
really?
So, oh. They just, because when they connect, it's so beautiful, and they become very protective of the baby.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just, aw.
How has Fexy been with the babies? I mean, now it's just sort of like a new thing in the house. And
She's great, though. I mean, she's
trying to figure
yeah,
out.
Every time, you know, when Kellen starts crying, that's his name, she'll come up and, you know, like, hey, what's going on? What's this? You know, can I lick him to make it better? What do I need to do? She's been very motherly at times. And then other times, and, you know, late at night when the baby's crying, she'll be like, can you keep that kid? I'm trying to sleep here. What are we doing?
I think it's the peanut butter baby wash that you're using. It just, that tends to attract them.
Well, you know, got to do what you got to do.
Rosalind, you know, I'm just scanning your bio here and astounded. I don't know why I'm astounded at all, because these things would be befitting of someone such as yourself. But the places you played in this country, from the Greek Theater in London's Café Royal to the Carnegie Hall debut that you did as a result of working with Michael Feinstein.
Yes.
He's a buddy of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like my second brother, you know. He's like my extended family, he and Terrence.
Yeah, he is amazing unto himself. But you have done so much. I mean, you've from Broadway to the concert stage and to television and all of these wonderful things. What is the favorite medium of yours?
I try to figure that out. I really love live performance, one-on-one with the audience, because I can be myself, you know. But I also love theater. And I loved, when I was with ABC Paramount, I loved being on television. I loved doing sitcoms. So, and I lost 2 clothing sizes. Maybe that's what I should be doing. from 1 week, you know, I was like, 2 sizes. I said, oh, this is good. We need to keep this up. But I enjoy all aspects of show business. And I, you know, it's just like with singing. I don't like to be pigeonholed into one area. I like to do different kinds of material. And people love to pigeonhole you. And I just can't. So I just like the differences, to experience the parts of my personality that are all inclusive within my soul.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I noticed looking through your bio material is the variation of things that are here. I mean, there's everything from, as Michael said, the Carnegie Hall thing, but also you, and this really intrigues me, you played yourself on The Nanny?
Oh my gosh,
God,
did she?
What was that experience like?
I would have done it again. It was a fun show. Everybody was great. It was a lot of fun. Fran was wonderful. But, you know, they advertised it for like a whole couple of weeks, and people thought it was somebody else that was going to be on the show because they didn't show the front of my face during the...
Okay.
So they thought it was going to be some... a relative of mine.
Okay.
And so, surprise, surprise. And it's gotten rerun so many times, even late at night. Unbelievable.
And it's running, late at night right now, actually.
It's so fun.
Oh, that's so,
so funny.
And the Saturday Night Live, the Tonight Show, Saturday Night Live, Entertainment Tonight. I mean, it's really an astounding resume. I'm just, I want to go back, though, to something you said, Michael, when you, you have a, I don't know if you did mention this, actually, but you have a performance coming up at Catalina.
Yes. This weekend. Yeah.
And I'm always curious about this, not being as familiar with cabaret as Michael, but I'm always curious about the process of how you arrive at your set. Is it as simple as just picking the songs that you like, or how much of a rhythm to the evening affects those choices when you pick the songs?
That's an interesting question. Rhythm has a lot to do with it, because you don't want to put your audience to sleep, and you don't want to, you know, colorizations. It's like an acting piece.
Right.
So you want to take people on a journey. So, yes, there's songs I like, songs I relate to, songs I feel the audience will enjoy. But they do have a rhythm.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not just all up or all a ballad. It's in between, a different beat. You know, it could be a Latin, it could be a jazz, and it could be a pop tune, a theater piece, you know, that's a total acting piece.
Right. I was just always curious about that, because I would think that, you know, that you have to have songs that you love, like all of us, songs that you love more than others, and
songs that you relate to.
That you relate
that
to.
That mean something to you, that say something to you, that you can share honestly with your audience, and usually you'll find people in the audience that feel the same way, or, oh my God, you connected with me. There was, you know, whenever somebody comes up to me after a performance, and let's say a particular song made something happen wonderful in their life. I remember one particular time in San Francisco where a couple, after I sang When I Fall in Love, came over to me and thanked me so much because the boyfriend proposed to his girlfriend right after that song.
Oh, wow.
So
wow.
That was lovely.
Yeah.
To have a positive effect in people's lives. That's
Are they still
about.
Together?
I haven't seen them in years. And you know what? They never called. They didn't even invite me to the wedding.
You see, you have an influence over people, right?
I'm telling you. My God, what is it?
Now, you're a woman who tours all over the country in concert. Is there a favorite city where you love to go to and love
good question.
To play? As opposed to someplace else?
Let's see. Well, you know, I have traveled the length and breadth of this country and hit towns I never knew the names of before I hit them. And I did find that those towns had a charm about them, and the audiences were wonderful. You know, as much as we love the big cities, I mean, New York, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, Miami, there was something about the people also in the small towns that the appreciation that you came to them. And
there's more of a sense of event.
Oh,
there's
it's a big deal
event.
For
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
So I have to say that those people, that those audiences were just made my day. I mean, I would even get them to sing. I would get rednecks, pardon my French, to sing Jewish songs with English lyrics. They had no idea. Now, who can
what
do that?
Concept, you know? Right?
And some people would even come up to me like, you know, some of us do know how to say shalom.
I was trying to be witty and think of a combination of Hebrew and hillbilly, and I couldn't put it together in time. I was going to say Hebrew Billy for a redneck singing Jewish song, but I couldn't
That's
put it
cute.
Together.
I like that. A Hebrew Billy.
There you go. Feel free to use it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we'll discuss terms later.
Okay.
Roslyn, you're also very, very philanthropic with your time and obviously your love for animals, which spoke earlier. In the story that you were telling about your dog, and I know you do a lot of work for animal welfare.
Yes, well, you know, when I lost Joshy, I suddenly thought, well, if I didn't have my baby to give to, I found all of these animal welfare areas that I could donate to, and I would donate in Josh's memory. And they were all wonderful. They all sent me cards, you know, saying they're sorry that I lost Joshy, but they're sure Joshy's proud of me. Helping to support their cause and take care of other babies.
Boy, there's some commercials, you know, on television. I'm sure we've all seen them that are with those beautiful dogs right now. They're running right now, actually, and it's just their faces and the music. That they're playing.
No.
And oh, my God.
Yeah, the one wasn't even about a dog-related cause. I think it was like either Kodak or something, but it was one where the woman goes up the stairs and the dog goes up the stairs and they follow the dog's life and then the dog is older and the dog is trying to get up the stairs and it's probably for gum or cereal or something. And it's just like this is really poignant. See, the dog's got the little gray around the muzzle. It's just like they pull those heartstrings. Madison Avenue knows where they are.
Well, it's pretty easy to pull those heartstrings with dogs. I mean, yes. I look at my dog's face every night, and I think you recorded a song when you looked at the song from the that great movie Dr. Dolittle. Didn't you record it?
Can you read my mind?
Yes.
And did you know, because you're bringing this up, that they used it on one of the magazine shows when they had a pet psychic on.
There you go.
Okay. They played Can You Read My Mind.
Didn't you also do one from Dr. I think that was from Superman, right? Dr. Dolittle was when you
talk
I look in your eyes.
Oh.
When I look in your eyes. No.
When I look in your eyes. Oh, God.
I think we're going with a different singer here, Michael.
First 45 I ever owned.
Yeah.
45, you know, when records used to be 45s. First one, Talk to the Animals.
Talk to the Animals.
Yes, Dr. Dolittle. Which shows you what a odd childhood I had.
There you go.
That's not odd. That was a lovely movie.
It was a lovely
movie. The original with Rex Harrison.
And it was him singing it,
Tony Newley.
Yeah.
Samantha Eggar.
Yeah. No, I remember it well. And you couldn't. And the thing was, it was before VHS tape, so you didn't see it. You had to wait for it to come on TV.
That's
right. So you needed the 45s.
It's kind of like Peter Pan with Mary Martin. Did that ever go to VHS? I don't think so.
You know, I think...
Did it ever get... Well, the stage?
I think it did, actually.
Did it go to VHS?
I mean, the television version of the stage version.
Well, we were talking about a production of Peter Pan that we saw in last episode, which didn't go very well. The one that I was describing to you that... You don't remember it, do you?
Oh, you mean the big
the one,
one
starring Bruce Valanche. It just didn't fly.
Oh, my... Oh, wait. That's so funny, because I played Peter Pan in third grade.
Oh, did you?
And at the time, I was a very overweight child, and I used to tell jokes about... Well, somebody said, well, did you fly? I said, no, they were afraid I'd break the rope.
There's one that has just come in from London, actually, in Orange County. It just opened on the 28th of September. And it is with an all-English cast. We were talking about it last week. And it's the first production that actually is done 360 degrees.
Theater in the round.
Theater in the round, but it's a special tent
that's built.
They have footage that's going all around the interior of the theater as the kids are flying through London during that period.
But then the audience does too.
And the audience does
then
too.
They flip it so that it's like a you know, like the Back to the Future ride where they give you know you actually feel as though
you feel
you're
like
moving.
You're moving.
I mean, they did a whole special on it on CBS. I think it was CBS News Sunday Morning, or it was just on a
well, I saw it on PBS recently too.
Oh, that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
I watch PBS too.
Well, another cause that is dear to your heart and you work very hard for is Alzheimer's.
Yes, I lost my mom in her final years after open heart surgery. She ended up with Alzheimer's several years down the road after the surgery because she was 82 when she had the surgery. And usually when older people have surgery at that age and they're with the anesthesia and the heart and lung machine for so many hours, it can affect the brain tissue because oxygen is denied. And... So I went through the whole caretaking process with my mom.
Well, I applaud you for that. My parents both have mid-stages of Alzheimer's right now. And it's tough. You know, it's really hard to look at your parents, as you well know, and have them also digress and become...
Yes, your child.
Your child.
Your child.
You're exactly right.
Actually, like to babyhood, where they don't even know what washing means.
Right.
Or, why are you doing this to me? Or
right.
I would say to my mother, Ma, you want to have liver for dinner or something? She goes, I never liked liver in my life. My mother was the first health food person I've ever met in my life. She was the first person to go to health food stores. Now she didn't like spinach. She wanted milkshakes. So some of it was funny, and some of it, we actually got her to fly because she forgot she was afraid.
Really?
So we got her to go visit the East Coast because she didn't think she was on an airplane, and she totally lost the fear.
Wow.
Where she would never get on one.
That's fascinating.
That is.
I've never heard that before. That the memory would affect a phobia like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But there were the trying times, and each stage of the progression of the disease was very hard to handle. And we were lucky, though, that we were able to have 24-hour care, and I oversaw that care. I feel so deeply for people who are not in that position to have to be the single and sole caretaker. And I do... I do recommend reading The 36-Hour Day. A friend of mine had given me the book, and I in turn sent it over to my siblings, because it tells you what to expect. It kind of tells you where this disease is going to go and how to handle things as they happen. So.
And the name of the book again, Rosalind?
The 36-Hour Day.
The 36-Hour Day. Okay. We'll put a link to that
on our absolutely.
Website.
And for all of you listening to know more about Rosalind Kind, just go to her website, rosalindkind.com.
That's right.
And you'll find everything else you want to know about her that we haven't discussed here
well,
today.
Not everything, Michael. Come on. Whoa. There's got to be some secrets here.
But one thing we do want
like
you to...
Like Mike going to your pajama party. That's
oh, that's true. I have to tell you this. She did the greatest favor in the world for me.
Okay.
Through a mutual friend of ours.
He said cautiously.
No, this was the beginning of our relationship. Oh, yeah. That's the night that we met, actually. Significant birthday. Did you say the number?
No, I didn't.
You didn't? Well,
no, I'm nice
I don't
about
remember.
Those things.
Yeah. Very sweet. A significant birthday. And as a surprise, our mutual friend who was playing the show, because it was a dinner and show at the Maskers Club.
I couldn't remember the name of that
Maskers,
club on 3rd Street.
On 3rd Street, right. Yeah. And he said, well, I'll be there and do the show for you. And I just have to pick up a friend from the airport. Can I bring her? And I said, sure, absolutely. And he did. And it was Rosalind Kind.
In my pajamas.
In your pajamas.
And it was a pajama party. I always had wanted to give myself a pajama party. And I did. That was the invitations, were me as a baby in my pajamas and, you know, the whole thing. And she got up and sang two amazing songs.
Oh, really?
Yes.
How wonderful
two amazing
was that?
Songs.
In her pajamas.
In her pajamas.
See, there's something oddly arousing to me. I got to tell you. I don't know why.
They weren't from Victoria's Secret, if you know what I mean.
Damn.
They were the ones with the feet in them. The ones with the feet
in them.
With
the
open back, yeah.
The to tush. Expose that well-known crack.
Yes, well, in keeping with the theme of our show, yes, with buttocks exposing.
So one more time, ladies and gentlemen, Rosalind Kind in concert at Catalina Jazz Club in Hollywood this Friday, October 8th, and Saturday, October 9th. And to purchase tickets, visit catalinajazz.com or call 213-466-2210. One more, 213-466-2210. I assure you, you will have the time of your life.
And Rosalind, the track that we played earlier at times like this, we're going to play another one at the end of the show, but the CD is Come What May,
Come
and I'm
what
assuming
may.
That's on
yes.
Amazon and all that.
Yes,
so.
And CD Baby and
okay.
iTunes. Yes.
Beautiful. Okay, wonderful. We should do our... arts calendar.
Yes.
We jump into that, Michael. You want me to kick it off?
Please do.
I certainly will. Did you know that Timothy McVeigh and Gore Vidal were pen pals? What would their conversations have been like if they had ever met in person? Famed fiction writer Edmund White has imagined just that. For prison house conversations between the nation's deadliest domestic terrorists and one of the world's most famous and opinionated gadflies. The names have been changed, the ideas have not. This intimate and fascinating portrait of two men, both firebrands who say and do as they believe, delves deeply into the idea of what it means to be American and what one believes they must do for their country. Catch it now through November 14th at the Blank Theater Company. I don't think, you know, Michael, we have that whole thing listed, and I don't think we gave the name of the show in that description.
We it's said, Terre Haute.
Terre Haute.
Terre Haute.
Terre Haute
yes.
is the name. And actually, Mike Farrell is in that cast, who
Mike
will be
Farrell?
With us next week.
From MASH, yes. Yes, Mike will be there.
Okay.
And our next show being featured this week is with some of the most lavish sets, costumes, and special effects ever to have been created for the stage. Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera, directed by Harold Prince, traces the tragic love story of a beautiful opera singer and a young composer, shamed by his physical appearance into a shadowy existence beneath the majestic Paris Opera House. Now in its final Los Angeles engagement, don't miss this Broadway blockbuster on stage at Hollywood's Pantages Theater through October 31st.
Now, for further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts live calendar, visit us during the week at stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week. Now, we are going to speak to Ian Vogt shortly. But we have, Michael, I want you to share your thoughts about your recent performance or the recent production at Sterling's Upstairs
well,
at Botello's.
Well, yes, Sterling's Upstairs at Botello's in the beautiful Tahunga Village, where you've been. Derek Klena had his cabaret debut last night, and Derek Klena was one of the top five of something that we do at Sterling's every year called LA's Next Great Stage Star. very American Idol-like in the foundation, but has now become, in 4 years, one of the most prominent theater talent competitions. It takes place over 6 weeks. And this young man, a strapping 18 years old until last night when he turned 19, brought in a show that looked like he had been doing it for years. At that level, 18 years old, to be that confident and self-assured at doing an hour performance, holding the audience in the palm of his hand, was pretty amazing. And I knew when we met him a year ago in November when he came to audition for us, as hundreds of young people get their, going in for the auditions and get their careers jump-started when if they get selected to be in this competition. He was one of them. And he's been working nonstop. And ever since then, you know, getting the agent, because we have a pool of about 15 major elite players in Los Angeles, from the producers to the agents to the casting people that come and they actually judge this competition. So it's a pretty special thing. And I was so proud of him. And I knew, when we met him, you know, when you meet somebody that they have that star quality just in speaking to them, you know that something's special. That's what he did. And he did it beautifully last night. So thank you for asking.
Oh, yeah. No. And he just had done Cinderella. Is that what
he starred in as the prince?
As the prince.
Rodgers
and
Hammerstein Cinderella out at Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza for Cabrillo Music Theater. Jumped over to star in Joseph for Performance Riverside in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. While rehearsing for this cabaret, which he opened last night, while rehearsing to star as Richie Cunningham in Happy Days back at Cabrillo Music Theater. I don't know how.
And just a
you
wonderful,
have to be 18 to be able to do that, right?
And a wonderful young man, though. Very kind, very considerate, very polite, and very refreshingly so. You know, just a cool kid.
And a family.
Yeah.
And here's a concept that is functional and actually likes each other. Everybody
wow.
likes each other.
That's a great ingredient. First of all, hearing about a good heart and a good kid and a good family, because, people like that deserve big breaks.
Boy, do I love this boy and his family. They are aces in my book. And then Paul.
And nice to hear about a wonderful performance.
Yes.
Because now we have to talk about another production.
Yes, we do. We have to talk about Paul and I saw a production at the Amundsen Theater called Leap of Faith.
Leap of Faith,
the new musical.
Yes. I saw it last night. Michael, you saw it earlier.
Saw it a little earlier. And Raul Esparza, the fabulous Raul Esparza, is starring in this show with one beautiful woman by the name of Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields, yes. And I shouldn't have made my little joke at the beginning of that, because it's not the performers, because they really, I mean, they give it their all. Raul especially. He just burns in the production numbers. You know, he burns the place down. I saw him in Company. My friend Lena Rideout was in Company with him on Broadway when he won the Tony for that.
No. He's been nominated four times, but never won.
Okay, so he was nominated for that.
Yeah.
And he's an incredibly charismatic performer, and I felt bad for him, and I felt bad for Brooke Shields, because I just found I don't know how you felt about it. We haven't talked about it yet, but I just found the book of the musical to just be so vanilla and so. I mean, it was there the scenes in between. You know, the production, it's based on the 1992 Steve Martin film Leap of Faith, which is about a corrupt touring evangelist who takes these little towns for a ride and gets all money. So, you know, there are gospel numbers and production numbers that you would expect to be dazzling, and they are. You know, they just, and the voices and the way they present them are just, you know, really phenomenal. But these interstitial scenes between these production numbers are just, I mean, vanilla is really the only word I could use for it. The energy does not stay up. It just doesn't. It didn't gel for me personally.
I'd have to liken it back to a more traditional musical from the past, and I think that was part of their objective in doing this. I think the woman who wrote the screenplay, interestingly enough, did the book for the musical.
So okay,
it's a 10-year project that finally came to fruition. I will say that musically, Alan Menken did the entire score. 8-time Academy Award winner. Hard to go wrong with that.
For sure.
And I thought there was some wonderful music in the show.
Yeah. No.
I am so taken with Raul Esparza. I mean, and his performance level and his uniqueness as a performer. And he is the show. I mean, he really is the show. And Brooke, on the other hand, who I think is a wonderful actress, actually. I think she's a captivating, beautiful woman, obviously.
Beautiful, yes.
But an interesting actress. And I think that that's what saved her was her acting, because as a singer, even though she can sing, she can't hold herself in that same league as a Raul Esparza, mm-hmm. or frankly anybody else on the stage that was singing. Right. It's just not mm-hmm. possible, yeah. you know. Mm-hmm. But I think that they took that into consideration also because she didn't have a lot of material to sing, and she had a couple duets in particular that were, you know, what she kind of clung on to. But I liked her performance. I'm just curious in this kind of world that we live in where critics can be so very critical in theater, especially New York critics, which is where this show is going, yeah. is to New York, next stop.
Yeah.
As to how it's going to fare. I mean, the big payoff of the show, which I'm really, we're not going to talk to you about that. And if you saw the movie, you would know anyway. But it's a long time to wait for that payoff. It's done mm-hmm. in a spectacular way, I might add, I thought.
It's a long time to wait for the payoff, but it's also a long time to wait for the payoff when the way the script is structured, you kind of see that coming down the street. I mean, it's not like it's a big
surprise.
You know, surprise. I mean, at least I didn't feel that way. I don't
well, know. And we didn't really say the plot line.
No, well, no, we just did a little synopsis of a touring, you know, corrupt televangelist, which you know, after the first scene. So it's, you know. But not to belabor it, but getting back to what you said about Brooke Shields, I think the other thing that she had going against her, which, you know, vocally, you know that you're not going to have, but, you know, she's not there because she's a singer. She's there because she's Brooke Shields. You know, I mean, that's what we have to do in this marketplace. But even the scenes were just, I mean, I felt she was laboring against a not really fleshed out character. I found her character be very two-dimensional and very, and not without giving anything away, you know, she recognizes this guy as a charlatan from the word go, but yet in the second song, he's already won her over. So there was, the character development was, I mean, it's a musical. I'm not asking for George Bernard Shaw character development, but a little bit more than what was there. So, anyway, that's my...
Oh, Brooke Shields.
Am I sounding snarky? Am I sounding snarky? I don't mean to.
I think we have Brooke Shields on the line right now.
Oh. Yeah. Hi. Loved you, pretty baby. I got nothing.
Well, we'll close it out with this. I mean, I think it's a valiant attempt at doing a show that has some style. It had great style as far as I was concerned. The dancing, I thought Rob Ashford did an amazing job of directing it.
And the music. I'm with you on Alan Menken. And the choir, the one woman who leads the choir, she has a killer voice.
Yes, just burned indeed, indeed. Yeah. But I hope it finds its legs and stands up a little bit taller by the time it gets to New York, which is probably exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. It's here until the 24th of October.
Yeah.
So they have some time to work out.
They do. They've had 2 weeks of previews. They started September 11th, and they just opened yesterday, so they've got some time, and I think it'll happen. That's
and they've also said that, Mike at Performing Arts Live said, he said there's already been significant growth and of, you know, morphing as this happened during the preview process.
Right.
So. Okay.
Well, we have somebody that's been patiently waiting in the studio here to chat with us, and we're so happy that he, on a last-minute notice, replaced Richard Chamberlain today. So thank you, Ian, for joining us.
Well, Ian, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Absolutely.
So now, Ian, you're currently in this production that I've heard wonderful things about.
Oh, that's funny.
It's Seaglass Theater's production of Grapes and Nuts. It's obviously a spoof of John Steinbeck that at the risk of patting ourselves on the back here, we have really, critically, I don't think you could do better. I mean, in terms of the response that we've gotten, we've had 5 reviews. Ian is part of in addition to the other things that he does, he's playing Tom Joad in this production of Grapes and Nuts, and it's really just sort of been lightning in a bottle with this cast, because it really is a very, very strong cast, and I don't know how Ian feels about the experience, but I'd be interested to hear.
I've had a great time.
Have you?
The director was fabulous.
Who is that director?
Ian? Oh, I forget his name. I think it's...
Oh, I don't know. I just know he has huge hands, a big nose,
yes.
giant feet.
Loves dogs.
And issues. That's what he's got.
And imitates his mom.
For 11.
Do you know...
Paul, get the car. I'll have another cheese ball and just sit here and eat wet cigarette butts like a dog.
Charlotte, how long have you been putting up with this?
Long time. For those of you who are listening, well, you're all listening, you can't see this, but if you could hear someone rolling their eyes, you would have heard it just then.
She is so sweet, your mother.
Yes. We have to be polite in front of her, huh?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Right. But back to Ian. Ian, what I'm most interested in is your take on the production and the morphing of the two plays. I think it's important to stress that it's not a parody of the Grapes of Wrath or of Mice and Men. It's the two stories brought together into a new piece. And would you describe what sort of happens in hobbling those two pieces of literature together?
The main storyline is obviously Grapes of Wrath, and then you kind of stick in Lenny from Of Mice and Men and the Curly and sort of the end of Mice and Men all wrapped right. into it. Now, the other part of that I think is brilliant about it is they take Grapes of Wrath, the movie, and use some of that that's not just directly from the book, and then they have moments from the book,
right.
obviously, that are brilliantly used in the story as well. It's kind of like they used all sorts of any piece of source material they could get from any
right.
movies.
And different films. And so Jode... is actually almost the Lenny caretaker that George right. was in the thing.
That's right.
Ian had pointed out that after he had already been cast and we were already working on the production, that it was only then that he watched the film The Grapes of Wrath, and he was very ashamed of himself for laughing.
Maybe I had seen the original Grapes of Wrath movie many, many years ago as a kid, but I couldn't recall any of it. And as I started watching it, I found myself bursting into laughter. And my wife is like, "What are you doing? What are you watching?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm watching Grapes of Wrath, a classic movie." And she's saying, "It's not supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be the saddest movie ever." And I'm like, "No, it's really funny now that you once we're in the play that we're in."
So. Once you spoof something like that.
Oh. Yeah. But you know what makes it funny, and I say this unbiasedly, is that they play it for real. I mean, they're over the top, but it's all done with this framework of reality, yeah. and that's what makes it so hilarious. I mean, it is truly pee in your pants comedy. That's what this is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, it is. It's it's like very, very serious ridiculousness
yeah.
at times.
Yeah. Yeah. And you being with those deadpan faces that you put out there to the audience. I mean, my God.
I am convinced, and I don't say this because Ian's here, because anyone who sees the show will immediately know that this is the case, but Tom Joad is the hardest role in the play because he's the hub of the insane wheel. And so you have Ma and you have Pa who have much more, not exaggerated characterizations, but broader characterization.
Yeah, yeah.
But without the stability of that, you know, that rudder, you go way off.
I am by sure the most grounded character of all the characters. And yet I still have my moments where you kind of step off that edge.
Yeah, yeah. But it's even that I find that to be even funnier because yeah. that's when you go south, then people know that all bets are off.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're in for a long night.
Yeah.
When he goes south, yeah, if he goes south.
A little bit of both.
Yeah. And it's funny, I'm sure Ian will attest to this too. You know, you immediately know how familiar people in the audience are with the source material yeah. by the anticipatory laughter when a bit is coming up, because
Can I just say, this is the only show I've ever done where, you know, you can be leading towards something and then you'll hear out loud from the audience somebody going, "Oh no!" Before anything has actually happened.
Yeah. yeah
I mean,
yeah.
they just start talking back to you like, "Oh no! Oh,
they're
really?
They're not going to do that."
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Please no.
But
yeah.
you know, on the other hand, if you've never seen The Grapes of Wrath or of Mice yeah. and Men, this show still works because yeah. Another whole story is evolving out of the combination of these two shows, you know, satirically.
The story's still fun in and of itself. I mean, the way they structured it together, it's just if you have the material that, or if you're familiar with either one, the book or the movie, there's a certain level of heightened awareness you
yeah.
have.
Yeah.
First film jokes, although some of them will slide by you. But
Right. Now, Ian, let me ask you a question. I'm curious about this. We asked Roz kind of earlier about, you know, what medium she enjoyed the most. Now, you've done a lot of theater, and you're obviously a very talented comedian on the stage and a comedic actor, and I've seen you also do some very serious work on the stage. Mm-hmm. And you've done a lot of television, from Criminal Minds and Without a Trace, Everwood, Scrubs, all of those shows. What do you prefer? Where is your level of comfort?
I love both. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, like Rosalind. I'm never going to say I prefer one over the other. There's an immediacy to theater that is great that you don't get from TV and film, but doing TV and film, I love
I love the work and the speed of TV and film as well. It's just, I love both. I'm not going to say I prefer one over the other, because I don't. I'll work in either.
And, of course, the adult film industry, which we haven't really touched on.
Oh, but well.
That's completely
That's where the money is really made.
You didn't ask me about that.
but also, share this last thing that you did, the Bump in the Night project, which is really a sort of a fascinating little snippet. Please share.
Dances with Films is an independent film festival that takes place in Los Angeles, and I was just on the internet one night, and this was just a few months back, when my wife was still pregnant, and I saw that they were taking submissions for 2-minute shorts. It was just basically 2 pages of material, and my wife's a writer, she's a TV writer, but she had written some shorts that were like 7 or 8 pages long, and I said, hey, honey, why don't we, you know, there's this thing, they let you, you basically submit this, if they choose you, you have what is 4 hours to shoot and edit a film, short film, all in one day. And I said, why don't we just take one of the things you've written and edit it and send it in, see what happens. And we did. We took something she had written that was about 8 pages. We cut it down to 2. We sent it in. And a week later, we're like, yeah, great. You're on. You're going to do it. And we're like, wow.
Wow.
Okay. So basically, you have to assemble a team. You assemble a cinematographer. The Canon is the sponsor of it. So they give you the new Canon Mark II. Which is, you know, extraordinary.
This new super high-end digital camera.
Yeah, it's a DSLR. It shoots digital stills, but now they're starting to be able to shoot actual video with them. And with all their lenses, it begins to look very much like film. I mean, like 35 millimeter.
Cool.
Like the last episode of House, they actually shot with this thing for the last season.
Okay.
So it was kind of a learning experience for everyone to work with, but that's what we got to do is spend a day just shooting, editing, and, you know, being part of one of 8 people who are part of the this competition. It wasn't really a competition, it was just an opportunity to work.
Now, is that viewable online now? So can people find that? Is it just sort of a YouTube search, or?
I guess if we put it online.
Always self-promoting this guy. Yeah.
It's not technically online at the moment.
Okay. Well, if it does go online, we will put the link to it on stateofthearts.la.com. That's stateofthearts.la.com. And we have 5 minutes left.
So I just want to tell people that they should go see this very talented young man and his castmates and this talented director that sits across from me, Paul Sterley, Sea Glass Theater's managing director of Grapes and Nuts at the Little Vic at the Victory Theater Center in Burbank. And just simply go to Sea Glass Theater with an R-E at the end of theater.
The affected spelling. Yes, seaglasstheater.org. And all the reviews are there, and they can click through and purchase
their tickets. And it's there through October 24th. I really urge you to see it. It's a laugh a minute this
morning. Yeah, people are really having a ball. So thank you. And now that we've praised you, we have to humiliate you.
Yes.
And we have to hear your most embarrassing.
And not just you, Ian. Rosalind's getting it, too.
Yeah. Rosalind we're saving for the end, because she described that, and that's a nice little button on our episode. And also, it actually keeps with our theme without realizing it. But Ian, what is your most humiliating experience, or embarrassing, or awkward, or catastrophic thing to happen either on stage or while you were performing, not necessarily on stage?
Yeah, many, many years ago, I was doing a Tennessee Williams Glass Menagerie, and I was playing Tom in that as well. Funny, maybe I should play a character named Tom. And we were, I remember getting up to rehearsals, and the director at the time wanted me smoking non-filtered cigarettes, and I was not a smoker, I'd never smoked before, and the day before we opened, we had 2 run-throughs, and so I think Tom lights up like 7 or 8 cigarettes in that show per show, so I probably smoked a whole pack of cigarettes the day before, and I remember waking up that night before we were opening, and I could not breathe, I was having an asthma attack. And I remember I didn't know what to do, so I went and as a kid, I sort of had asthmatic bronchitis, so I remember I have some medicine I'll take, and I took it, and then that made me sick. And I remember then finally going to the theater, and I was throwing up while I was trying to light these cigarettes, being on stage, you know, running off and on, just throwing up and then smoking in front of people. And I don't even remember doing the show. I just thought, what am I doing? What is this? And I didn't I went to the doctor, and the doctor's like, you know, maybe you shouldn't smoke. Rule number one.
And maybe the first time you smoke ever in your life, it should not be a pack of unfiltered.
Unfiltered cigarettes. And I had been obviously working with rehearsals in, and then I'm continuing to smoke for the whole show. And
So did you? Was it literally, I mean, without getting too graphic, was it literally just run off, run on, run off, run on?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, because Tom isn't on the whole time. He's on most of the time, but when I was not on, I'm sure I was
violent.
And when I was on, I was like, wow, this guy's really pale. He's really getting into the role of Tom here.
So what you're saying is that you were involved in something that took place on a stage that involved an involuntary bodily expulsion, if
That's
you
right.
will. Rosalind, would you care to tell your story?
Now that we're talking about expulsion. Well, I was starring in a production of Leader of the Pack in Calgary, Canada. My co-star was Andrew Stevens. And his character was leaving the stage, and I was left, I was playing Ellie, and I was left on stage with the gentleman that was playing Phil Spector, and Andrew exited the stage, and he decided he thought he'd be funny. So we're in the middle of the scene, and right in the middle of it comes the sounds of passing gas. I thought you were going to play
the reactor. Oh, go ahead. You talk it.
Say that.
Passing gas. That sounds like a whoopee cushion. Right?
It is. I have one with me at all times for situations just like this.
We just kind of like looked at each other, and we couldn't believe what just happened. And the audience just all of a sudden started to die laughing. And I had I stood there for a minute. I said, "They think I farted." I wanted to die. I wanted to crawl out. And I had to continue the scene. But we all stopped and we started to laugh.
Oh,
but they
how do you
still
not?
Thought that I did because people were walking out the theater thinking.
Okay.
We're talking embarrassing.
So she's here
right?
to clear that up.
Okay.
I'm here to clear the air.
And we have to clear the air too because we can't end on that note. So we're going to end on a more positive aspect for Rosalind, this next song from her CD is Play Us Off the Air.
Before you do, though, I think we should thank both of you so much for being here again, Rosalind, at the Catalina.
My pleasure. Thank you for
thank
having
you both.
Me.
This weekend, Ian in Of Grapes and Nuts, Seaglass Theater
thank
at the
you.
Victory Theater Center. And we'd like to just say that we're looking forward to having join us next week, Mike Farrell from the television show MASH, which we all loved and saw for so many years, and Jim Perrick from the hit HBO series True Blood, and film and television star Adam Arkin from Chicago Hope
that's
next
right,
week.
Well. Okay.
Rosalind, will you take us out?
She certainly will, and this is called How Do You Keep the Music
Playing?
Oh.
How do you